Boomskara! Hello! Welcome to episode 21 of Future Friday. I am the host, Thomas Francis Mayus, and today I am speaking with Chris Cresswell of the Flatliners. We have been playing shows and touring together for at least 10 years. I love Chris to death. He made my heart ache plenty for seeing my friends and family all over the globe. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I definitely need to make some more phone calls to friends I haven't talked to in a while. If you're one of those friends, give me a phone call. I love that shit. First, a little quick business. Email me, tom@futurefriday.net, with your thoughts, ideas, gripes, whatever bullshit, and I will get back to you. I am holding off on the social at the moment because I don't like to be beholden to the moment in that way that is firing off dopamine in my brain, trying to get me to pick up my phone every 5 seconds. It's been a bit of a pain in the ass, and not having that shit on my phone for a week has been fucking awesome. It actually has completely improved my life. What do you know? If you'd like to subscribe, that would be fantastic. And better yet, tell a friend about the show. It seems to be the way that I find out about most of the podcasts that I like to listen to. Alright, now, Chris put out a solo record this year called The Inside Man. It is a collection of covers recorded in self-isolation. It was recorded, performed, and mixed by him at his home. It's fucking awesome. We talk a bit about the process and commiserate on what that's like to kind of just dive in with the equipment at your house. Pretty fucking cool. There's a link to the record in the show notes. My favorite cover is the one of We Will Become Silhouettes by the Postal Service. It's phenomenal. You can find that record at chriscresswell.bandcamp.com. Also, check out Last Wishes Supply Company at lastwishessupply.com. It's a clothing company run by none other than Chris himself. It's pretty cool. They got really awesome shit on there. I'm eyeing up one of those long sleeve tees that they got there. It's funny, I never wore long sleeve tees my entire life, and then in the last year I've gotten maybe two or three of them. One of them's like a weird tie-dye one with mushrooms on it. I absolutely love it, whatever, blah, 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 going on sidetrack. But I think it's going to be a nice fall pandemic staple to be able to just throw on a long sleeve t-shirt, walk around the house, and kind of draw neurotic conclusions about the world with a complete lack of evidence. Join me. Check out lastwishessupply.com and lastwishessupply on the gram. Today's guest, after this very caffeine-jacked field intro, Chris Cresswell.
Chris, thanks so much for joining me. At the risk of sounding ridiculous, how you doing?
I mean, I'm all right. I'm okay. Yeah, all things considered, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. You know, all things considered, good. Exactly. You know, I'm here talking good. To my friend. I mentioned in the email I sent to you when we were talking about doing this that the American-Canadian border is closed for the first time since 1842.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking crazy.
It is fucking crazy. I have a family member who is a border officer, and so I'm kind of getting the inside scoop from her.
As a Canadian border officer?
As a Canadian border officer, cool, yeah. Cool. So I'm getting the inside scoop from her, and it's, throughout this whole year so far, and it's never been good news. So.
I can imagine not.
Yeah.
Did you say that, do they have to turn away a lot of people? Are people kind of just like lackadaisically wandering over?
There are people trying to play dumb. Not realizing there's a global pandemic and like a huge public health crisis for the first time in like 100 years. Yeah. I guess one of this magnitude, you know. There's people that have successfully found a loophole kind of in Western US and Western Canada, or kind of like, you know, in like the Great Plains kind of area. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that they're going to Alaska. So they're finding a way to get into Canada by saying they're going to go through Canada to get to Alaska. But meanwhile, they're actually just sticking around and like going to like Banff, Alberta, and just kicking it on like a patio at a restaurant. Wow. No masks.
That's so funny. Yeah. You imagine that someone would see like a South Dakota license plate and be like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, the story I heard was that it was a Texas family. So the moment they started speaking to this this woman working at a restaurant, the woman at the restaurant in Banff was like, "Where are you from?"
Yeah.
And they said Texas, and she said, "That's not in Canada. You should leave."
Yeah, you can't make that any more of an American story than to give them a Texas license plate. They're probably driving a massive vehicle, God. big old thick accent. Love it.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's not that I don't want. I like not to get real or dark too early, sure. But I don't want this whole situation to, I don't want Canadians to be just dead set against Americans. I don't want Americans to be dead set against Canadians. I don't think what we need now is more division, you know? Yeah. I think we need the exact opposite. So it's concerning how long the border has been closed, and obviously it's for health reasons, but you got to believe that already out there, and even more so once it'll continue to be that way, just being, meaning the border being closed, is that it's going to inspire a lot of people to be resentful of the other country. And sure. That's not good. That's not good. Yeah, it's dangerous.
Yeah, I'd imagine the rhetoric from people in positions of power will, you know, amplify that, flare it up. And also, I mean, when people in our modern history, both of our countries, when the government and different institutions that have, hold massive power get opportunities to have to use the power, they don't really give it back. You know, I don't. It would be difficult to see the border being as open as it was before this, even after September 11th, you know, when it was closed for the first time. Or you needed a passport at least a couple years after that to go back and forth. Whereas you used to be, when I was a kid, we just walked to Canada when we went to Niagara Falls.
Yeah. And
that's like something.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, you can't, obviously can't do. And yeah, man, like you're saying, the division, the divisiveness in our country between the two of us, like it's pretty wild. It's insane. Even kind of within our different respective political groups, people are like turning on each other. There's all kinds of shaming when involved with like people doing things that are within COVID guidelines, like all kinds of, it just seems really confusing. And a lot of people have very high emotions, but it also does only seem to exist on social media and the news for me. So I kind of have to keep remembering that.
Yeah, are you, I mean, are like you guys are okay? You and Beth Ann are okay? Your families are okay?
Yeah, we're good. My brother actually, hilariously enough, he works at a manufacturing plant that manufactures toilet paper, which, as we know, is in a shortage.
Ooh,
so he's been
big hookup this year.
Yeah, right? Dude, I got a guy, let me tell you.
But you have a toilet paper guy. Good
yeah, for you. Right? But he literally has been working really hard this entire time, 60 hours a week to fill the supply, and he's doing good. And that, I first went to him because he's the one who had to, like, he has to deal with so many different protocols with, like, temperature checks coming in on the plant and having to spend all day policing employees to, do things that are anti-biological, you know, like as far as interacting with each other and shit like that. Family's good. I hope you and Katie are good. Things in Philadelphia were very weird at first, and now they're kind of becoming, I hate to use the phrase a new normal. I think it's a bizarre kind of like, I don't know, not a trigger word, but just like a bizarre way to frame everything. Cause I don't think it should have to be this way.
It's somehow like it was, I feel like that term was coined to make people feel at ease with this whole, scenario that's unfolding before us, but now it feels aggressive anytime I hear it. You know, it's aggressive somehow. Yeah, I'm not sure how that happened, but we're doing okay. It's similar up here in the I'm in Toronto, and like, you know, things are feeling a little more normal. Things were, you know, pretty difficult for everyone everywhere at first,
sure,
and then you adapt and you learn how to, you know, live your life in this way for a little while, and then all of a sudden 7 months have gone by.
Yeah.
And there's no real end in sight yet, but there's a little progress in at least the way you feel and the way people are able to interact in person from a distance and this and that. I mean, the trouble now with where both of us live is that, I mean, once fall hits, that means winter's around the corner, and then once that hits, shit might hit the fan again, dude. So I don't know. I mean I'm sure you feel a similar way. This was the weirdest summer yet, but it was the first one I've been home for in over 10 years.
Man, and so glad you brought that up.
And it was cool.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I don't know. I feel like there's maybe some people listening that would have seen our bands play shows this summer. So it's not me sitting here trying to say, I'm so glad all these shows got canceled. So, you know, I could be home. It's not that at all. But, there is something interesting I find about the way you and I both live, and that we are always kind of moving at a certain pace, and you're always on the go, and your body and your brain just become so accustomed to operating at that speed. And when everything hits fucking stop, not even pause, just stop, it's a huge thing to get used to. And those first few weeks, I mean, you guys were on tour, right?
We were in
Australia or something.
Yeah.
That's
cancel New
crazy.
Zealand and book it back home real fast. And
so like you're out there doing
bizarre.
Your thing, living your life, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, we have to go home right now. We have to go home right now.
Yeah.
That's never happened before. I don't know. Even though so much time has passed and I've been thinking about it a lot, I still can't find the way to properly express how it makes me feel. But in the end, the beginning of it was really tough. And then now I think I've just gotten used to slowing my program down, and it feels good. And you know what? It's probably good for people like you and I who have lived this life away from home, away from family, away from friends. I mean, with other friends and with other family, but you know, there's nothing we can do about it. So, you know,
I don't even think that we need to throw the caveat.
So it's just been an interesting year, to say the fucking least, but I've really enjoyed being home. Once we kind of figured out we had to cancel everything this year and try to, I mean, we've come up with like 50 different like plan Bs now for whatever we're going to do after this. And it'll continue to be that way until we really know. But it's been great, man. Like, this is the first time my wife and I have spent this much solid amount of time together ever in like the almost 10 years we've been together. So, and it's been great. And we're lucky for that, because I know, you know, for other folks, it hasn't been that easy. But I don't know. That's been, I'm super grateful for all that, you know, out of this whole thing. Like, there is, we got to just find some silver lining out of this whole shit pile, you know?
100%. I think we don't even need to throw the caveat out there, but people, you know, this is a tragedy. There's economic suffering that is unparalleled. I think that the U.S.'s debt just surpassed its GDP for the first time since World War II, so we'll see what that means after. People are medically suffering, but as you know, as you said, the people for our lifestyle who have been gone and going 1,000 miles per hour for many, many years, it has been a nice readjustment to be able to be home. We got a garden this year. I got to actually watch go from, you know, seed to plant to part that you eat to that. Just being able to observe that part of life, nature on Earth was super interesting and weird, because we're usually just in a van or in the wagon or in the fucking plane flying around.
You're trying to grow like basil in the van or something next year.
funny enough, we did go to a Menards. We went to. You ever go to the Midwest? It's like a all-in-one Home Depot box store situation called Menards or Maynards or Meanards or something.
I feel like I've seen it, but I don't know if I can't say I've been in there.
I think it's a Michigan thing, but I bought an IV plant from there one time and brought it on tour, and it survived the entire, rest of the tour. And it's downstairs on my first floor, and it's like 11 feet long. But yeah, it's funny. So you mentioned the plan B situation where everybody's kind of scrambling. At first, I don't know how it was for you guys, but we, you know, we're continually rebooking the same tours that were being canceled every day. And that kind of turned into, you know, a joke in and of itself. And everybody's just been kind of scrambling to come up with things. And a lot of people I've talked to, especially we're putting out a redone version of our last record in like sometime this month. I don't even remember what day. But while doing that, we did some press, and everybody's like, yeah, so we're going to get so much good art and music from this time. And I keep thinking to myself that all the kind of musicians, songwriters, and artists that I know are working on their art and refining themselves. But a lot of them are kind of like branching out into the other aspects of what it's like to be able to be home for this long, like cooking every day, making bread, gardening, that kind of shit. It's been interesting to see that. But how are you keeping yourself busy? Like, what's your typical day like?
It is a good point you bring up about artists, especially like cultivating other things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's because there's so much time in your life. If you spend it the way we have, you can't really do that. I haven't had much downtime in all this. It's kind of funny to think about that. Like, I've been so busy. I think I just am wired that way, to be honest, man. Like, I've just always found a reason to be busy, whether I'm home or not. I mean, I don't know when it happened, but I just, all of a sudden, years ago, I found that I was on tour for 6 weeks. I'd come home for 10 days. I'd work at the restaurant for 8 of them and then go on tour for another month. And then on that tour, you're doing all this other shit. I don't know. I just always been that way. So now that I'm home, I mean, the beginning of it, we were real busy moving things around, trying to rebook stuff, and then realizing that, you know, this is a nightmare that is going to continue, unfortunately, for a little while longer. So, now I'm talking months ago at this point, but still true. And I don't know. One thing I've been trying to do the last few years, maybe somewhere deep down to combat all the bad things I've done to myself and my body over the years of touring, is I've been trying to get healthy. So, I've just been like, you know, years ago I changed like my diet and I cut a lot of stuff out and went vegan and I feel great. But then I'd still be on tour eating road food most nights of the year.
Yeah.
So, and I love to cook. And that's like one of the things, that's one of my least favorite things about being on the road, is that I got to eat basically at a restaurant every meal almost. which, you know, it can be great, but that's not really good for you, you know. I don't know.
It can also be horrible when you're in the middle in a place that would normally probably be described as a food desert, and you see a barman, you're like, yeah, we're feeding the band tonight, and it's like,
oh yeah,
fried chicken fingers, French fries.
Yeah. Only lettuce, brown, maybe. Only brown beige food. Yeah.
Only brown beige food. Yeah. Cooked in melted fat beige of some kind. Yeah.
So it's been really great.
Beige,
you know,
Jesus.
Just fried beige. You know, it's been great being home cooking and stuff. But I've also just been finally able to like exercise a lot more and like do like kind of hone in on that part of being healthy for me, my version of it, and all that kind of stuff. That's been great because that's been a big challenge of mine in the last few years being on the road. I've wanted to do that. It's hard to do it. There's not a lot of you know, as much as I think touring is pretty routine based, like that part of the routine is almost non-existent.
Sure.
Yeah, because you're in a new place every day, so that's been great.
What's your methods, what do you got going on?
It's super basic. It's nothing major. I'm just doing like some cardio every day. I'm doing like 5K a day, but in my
all
apartment.
Right.
Not like I'm not running up and down my fucking hallway or anything. I just like
the
I'm
Fitbit
doing five...
on, just waiting for the rocket ship to go off at 5K.
Yeah. Yeah. My cat is just like following me back and forth the whole time.
Neighbors love it.
Yeah. I'm on the top floor too, so they fuck. They're not very fond of me, I don't think. I don't know. I've just been doing like 5K on an elliptical every day and like some, you know, basic weights and like floor routine, just like easy stuff. But the stuff that has revealed itself to me this year, it's so basic, but it makes a world of difference. And I'm a Nighthawk too. And when we're on the road, we're playing the show, and then I like to hang out after the show. Yeah. And if we're drinking, if we're hanging out, whatever it is, like I'm just up late. So then I usually sleep in. So I'm also trying to change that, trying to become more of a morning guy.
Yeah,
which is you know, not a huge feat, but for me it's just
combating
years of
that's a pretty big deal, you know. And someone brought up a really good point to me recently about that staying up late on tour. It's that when you play a show and you play at 10 o'clock at nighttime and you get done at you know 11:30 or whatever, the amount of adrenaline and shit blasting through your veins makes it impossible to fall asleep anytime within the next several hours. So I think it's just kind of like, one thing I never really thought about, I was always like, yeah, of course I stay up late because that's like when it's fun. But it's like, no, you stay up late because you like, would you run a half marathon and then just go to bed afterwards? Like, no.
Yeah, I mean, again, not to get dark or whatever, but it's not surprising that there's a lot of addiction in music, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because of that, in touring musicians, because you need to find something to bring you down from, I mean, like even if we're just talking like smoking weed or drinking, you know what I mean? Like the G-rated stuff. It's like,
nothing good happens when your happy hour is like 1 a.m. You know,
it's not surprising because all that adrenaline is really getting you going. I mean, I definitely know about myself that I have a witching hour between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. That is when my brain is the most awake, productive. And it's honestly, creatively speaking, it's when I feel most like myself.
Sure.
And it's just from years of being on the road and working at a bar. And it's just those are high volume hours for me, you know.
Yeah.
So it's 100%. Interesting. I'm trying to change it, but I also don't want it to go away because it's kind of
romantic
sometimes.
Too. Yeah, you know? It's like I wrote this at like 2:30, you know, everyone was asleep. My wife was sleeping. We, you know, it was a dim light. And it just hit me.
Exactly. And man, my wife does get up really early throughout the week to go to work. So she goes to bed early too. So it's kind of a thing now where like she'll go to bed and I'll just be like, what am I doing now? Here we go. And I'm just like, I mean, I've been writing a lot, and a lot of it happens then. Man, I don't know. I've been keeping busy writing a lot.
That's great to hear. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
world needs
been,
it.
I mean, I think I needed it too, you know. I don't
Fuck
know.
Yeah.
It's been such a horrible year for so many reasons, and not that I want to make a record that's, you know, all about like a pandemic.
Yeah,
I don't think
the pandemic record that is just
I'm not going to do that.
Becomes one of very many.
Oh god, yeah. But I mean, yeah, any try to come up with any creative metaphor to mask the fact that you're talking about the coronavirus. Good luck. It's not going to work. I don't know. It's been a horrible year. And there's just a lot on everyone's minds.
Yeah.
And if I have the opportunity to write some of it down to make maybe to make some of it make sense, or just as far as how I'm processing the information, I mean, none of what's happening out in the world makes sense. I want to be clear about that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's helped me as you know, as it always has, like I'm sure for you and for sure. Our friends that do this, like not even just with music, but any kind of like art form or kind of expression in that way, it just, whatever you're going through, it only helps if you do what you're good at and do what you love. Even if you're just, you know, chipping away at it day by day. So it's been, I'm lucky for that, because I know there's a lot of people out there that have just been experiencing this year the same as we have, yeah. But with no real outlet to, you know, I don't know, to kind of get their head above water other than sharing like an infographic on the internet. You know what I mean? And that, and like, it's not that it's not helpful. It is, you know,
sure.
You're getting your voice out there and you're engaging in what's going on and these kind of injustices and stuff, but I don't know. I know that at least for how I can take information in and then dig into it, I'm lucky I have that outlet.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think that of what music gives to me, the framing of it, I like to know that I'm right, you know, like you want to know that you're right inside some way. So when you hear a song that makes you realize how you felt or reaffirms how you felt or reaffirms what you think or makes you look at something in a different way, but it's you anyway, you know? So I think that is the best thing to do and frame it as, and being able to write about this moment, people can share with that feeling, the way that you're portraying it, the way that you're vibing it with the music and the chords and the things that you're saying is great. It's fucking what we need in life. It's one of the few pure, good things.
It's true. I think, yeah, it's a really great way to share perspective. Obviously, it always has been, and it'll continue to be. And I think that's what we need probably more than anything else right now. The only drag, as we both know, is that you write something this year and then it's going to come out in like a year or two, probably, right?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, kind of, I've been thinking a lot about that recently too. I'm like, so what changes between now and then?
Dude, I think we're behind. You know? I think in punk rock and in our kind of rock and roll, the mindset of the generation that we came from and stuff, I think we're a little bit behind in the sense that music, you and I could write a song today sharing stem files on Dropbox and we could put the song out tomorrow on Spotify or fucking Tidal, all those, you know, stream it, where the majority is where it's going to be listened to. People will buy the vinyl and stuff, that collect vinyl, but that's the only way, you know, like we might as well just, I don't know. It just seems like we should start releasing music like a lot of like hip hop artists and shit do, where they just come out with it and put it out next week and then it's there. It's like an EP. It's almost, somebody brought up a great point that it's almost like how music used to be. Like the first LPs were combinations of singles, because you would just record a song, put it on the radio, put it out. And then it turned into like the conceptualizing LPs and having a whole album that comes out with like, it's fucking crazy. We write a record. You and I both, and you know, jump in if I'm where I get it wrong, but we write a record, we have fucking 10, 12, 15 songs, whatever. We write them, we record them, and then for some reason it takes like 8 or 9 months to share them, even though the majority of people are just going to download the song. So we have to come up with like a marketing strategy. Marketing strategy is people like it and then they tweet at each other. You know, like what? I just don't see how this other shit's going to go. We wait for the vinyl to get done, and for some reason, all the vinyl pressing plants in the entire world have like a 9-month backlog. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just does. Something seems off to me, and I could be talking about my ass, but I think that.
No, dude, I am 100% with you. I mean, the hip hop community has had it dialed in since the 90s, as far as like how people ingest music, or maybe like kind of, I don't know, they could have been kind of looking to the future and kind of predicting how people were going to, because even I remember growing up, my brother had all these like DJ Clue mixtapes, and who else? I mean, like every like big rapper in the 90s had like their crew, and they're kind of like, they had like a lot of them had their own labels, and like, you know, even if they were imprints of major labels, like that's great, because that's obviously in like the height of physical music sales and stuff, but it's super entrepreneurial, and it's incredible to see how the world of rap music, hip hop music, everything has always just had their foot on the gas and always had both hands on the wheel. And it's now to the point where I think we can thank that whole hip hop community for how single culture is back, you know? But it is true what you're saying. There are a lot of rock bands, punk bands, a lot of bands in general, whatever kind of genre, bands aren't really biting on that. I don't know why. I was trying to, experiment with it a little bit myself in the last couple of years, putting out like
solo singles. Shit. You absolutely were. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was trying to do that because I've been like working on a record for a while, and I'm happy to report that the tracking is finished. It took like a year and a half longer than I thought it would, but I was on tour a lot last year, and I was just doing it in between, and it was really actually, it ended up being really fun to do it that way. So not to bury the lead here, but I've been working on a new solo record, which feels great. Part of it was, my strategy was, I'm going to put these singles out, see how that does on their own, just to feel how it feels and to see how it looks and whatever. And it's exciting. It's really exciting to do it that way because you just give people a taste because, you know, I'm going to put a record out as a record in the future at some point, hopefully the near future, since we're going to get started mixing it and all that kind of stuff. But all this stuff, as you've said, takes time. And it's kind of funny that, yeah, vinyl pressing plants still haven't figured out how to make a record faster than 4 months. I'm not trying to like throw shade on vinyl manufacturers. I mean, we all need them, and there aren't that many of them anymore. So it's cool. Like, I mean, I appreciate what they're all doing. I guess it's probably way more of like a laborious, process than we understand. So yeah, I'm not trying to talk shit, but
15 people in Czech Republic, individually hammering each notch in the record.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. I mean, but it is cool to, at this point, in our existence, see where technology has taken us. And like, we could just, like you're saying, like we could put a song out tomorrow. I mean, I was doing like those singles are really fun to do. And I just literally put them out on like a digital distribution thing that I signed up for on the fucking internet and just, you know, paid a tiny bit of money and then they're there. It's so easy.
Totally.
And, and also I should be careful here. I don't want to discredit any labels out there. I have a lot of love for every record label that is doing their thing. Cause it's gotta be tough. Like we know as musicians how hard it is to, and how time consuming and how expensive it can be to make a record, to like record, and manufacture and then tour a record. Labels are doing that exact thing for, you know, dozens of bands at a time. So that's a lot of work.
And bands, as we both know, are not the easiest people to tie down, work with, anything done in a straight line. We totally have done complete 180s for seemingly arbitrary reasons about things. And Epitaph, like you're saying, you love to talk, you love the labels that you've worked with. Epitaph has been nothing but incredible for and with us. But yeah, and I think that the single thing, it isn't attributable to people's short attention spans or anything either. I think you can see that people have quite huge attention spans, and that's evidenced by the fact that some of the most popular podcasts are like 15 hours worth of content, and some of the TV shows that people like the most are serialized, intricate stories with lots of complex characters. You know, you got like The Wire, these Netflix shows. So I don't think it's like people are stupid and they want singles. I think it's just, you know, just that infrastructure is there and it works.
I think that it's you definitely nailed it. I think especially with, you know, it's now people are way more interested in watching a TV series than they are a movie. You know, people would rather, I think, commit their time to watching 15 episodes of a show over the course of, you know, however long, rather than like sit down and choose a movie to watch one night, you know, which is interesting.
Because you can only fit so much in the movie as well anyway, you know, like tell a much better story. In 15 hours than you can in two. I mean, what do I know?
Absolutely. No, it's true. It's true. You're definitely right. And I think that the single thing is just fun because, I mean, more than anything, you just get to hit people with one idea rather than this whole thing. You know what I mean? So it's kind of nice just, giving people a little taste or something like that. And it's, you know, it's funny when you think of how much goes into making a record. And you can spend years writing it. And I mean, you know, from you and I know each other for a long time, like my band takes a long time to make records. And we do it kind of by design because, more than anything, we want it to come out when it's ready. And we kind of enjoy the humming and hawing of the process, meaning like we'll write a song and we'll record a bunch of songs and then we'll kind of sit on them for a while and then like see how they make us feel a few months down the road rather than just kind of act fast. We're all for the slow burn and to let it sink in, even with us first before we put it out there to the world. But the problem with that, and our situation as the Flatliners is I think more of an exaggerated one because we're almost in like, we're almost in propaganda territory now. We're like every 5 years on average, we're putting a record out or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, for even, you know, like you guys have been consistently putting out records because you're able to, and that's amazing. You can still spend so much time writing these songs, recording them in a studio, mixing them, manufacturing it, waiting to be manufactured maybe, and then it comes out, and then someone can just be like, this record sucks.
Yeah.
You're like, oh,
you can be
so
like,
much
this record
time.
Sucks. Like,
so much
definitely
time. Yeah, well, yeah.
The panic moments of being like, all right, we wrote this, recorded it, and finished it in a period of 5 months, and have the night where maybe you smoke a little bit too much weed or whatever you listen to, and you're like,
No,
I should have said this there. I can't believe I played that guitar line there, you know, just completely like doubt the entire thing.
You get that different strain you haven't tried yet. And you're like, oh, this is a bad idea. No, it's true. I mean, you know, it's I can definitely come from the artist's mentality as well. But it's funny to me how dismissive we can be even of ourselves and of other people's art and stuff, just because it doesn't hit us right away. I don't know. I think it's funny, man. I think it's a weird part of the human brain that is just kind of like, impress me right now. And I think maybe the point I'm trying to get to is that I think part of that is because there's so much out there now.
Yeah.
Right. So that helps the single culture thrive because you only have to take up a little bit of everyone's time with one song at a time.
Exactly.
But it's also, I think it's tricky to navigate because of that, because I think it is true that because there's so much content out there for every single person on earth to ingest now and to mull over it, like it's really, well, actually, no, I shouldn't say mull over, because people want to just kind of be impressed and just like floored immediately, right? Like the expectation is higher now with how much stuff is out there. So it's really tricky, man, but it's kind of fun because at the very least it gives you and I something to talk about. I mean, you know what I mean? As artists and stuff. And it also gives us, and anyone who, you don't even have to be making music or any kind of art to do it, but people in general, like it just gives you something to think about as far as like how far things have come with how people take in art and culture and stuff and where it's going to go.
Yeah.
It's not over. You know what I mean? Like the evolution of human beings and curating cultures and fucking, you know, making art and taking it in and seeing how it makes you feel, like it's only going to get weirder and more confusing.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I'm curious to see where it goes, man.
Totally. I think that I'm a huge fan of how it's been rapidly democratized so quickly with the advent of home recording technology. You could go and buy a MacBook Air used on Craigslist, and it will have software good enough on it already that you can use to make music that can come on the radio. Technically, you know, like you're not going to have the experience to be able to mix and master it or know what you're doing at all, but you can do it. It is possible. You don't have to have $100,000 to buy the equipment anymore. So
it's
kids
true.
In bedrooms are just blasting out singles that are, you know, fantastic, and it's really allowed for the democratization of the shit. Like anybody who's good can get on it, and also it got like wildly niche as well. Like if you're into, I don't know, a certain video game and a certain type of music, and you're from a certain place, you can find a niche artist that hits that hard. You know, you can listen to like a Minecraft. I don't know. I probably just dated myself by picking the only video game I could think of, and be from Norway and like black metal, and there's going to be a band that like is your band. You know.
It's really easy to it's becoming easier and easier to like, you know, turn every stone over and to find your place, you know. I mean, but similar to what I was saying earlier about how I still am kind of romanticizing that Nighthawk witching hour of mine, and I don't want it to go away. I also, all you're saying is true with how technology's come this far with, you know, allowing people to record stuff in their bedrooms. I love it. I mean, I was doing it in lockdown. I still am. But I feel for our friends who have studios, because those are, I don't want those to go away either. You know what I mean? So like, I feel like maybe right now there's a good balance.
Yeah. 100%.
I don't want to halt any, you know, I don't want to halt any progression or evolution of anything really. But I think that, it's a good balance we have right now, and it's getting, maybe what it means is that it's getting a lot more of the youth like inspired to become an audio engineer. Because I think for a while there was, it was an older generation's thing, because it was such a tangible thing that you had to, you know, you're in the studio with this equipment, you're turning knobs,
you were a literal engineer. You know, like I'm watching the Beatles documentary where there's a guy with a suit on or a lab coat who's a literal engineer in the room. He's like, well, I guess we can make it sound like that. You know, like, so funny.
I wonder who the first engineer was to like just like show up to the studio with jeans on. People are like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right? Whoa. Exactly. BBC just fired his ass immediately.
Man, oh man. I mean, yeah, I was doing a lot of, I did this whole covers thing in lockdown, like a 10 song covers album. And I put it out on Bandcamp in like between April and June, I think, something like that. And, I just like once a week would work on a cover song and I would record it at home. And I'm using GarageBand. I'm not using anything, impressive, really.
That's stock program.
I'm using the free shit I got with my computer. And, I got a couple other things, like a good mic and a decent interface and stuff, but none of this is expensive stuff. And I just wanted to do it to have something to do during, the thick and early version of lockdown. And also, I've been really interested in learning a lot more about recording, about engineering, about producing, stuff like that. I mean, music is my life. So I just want to learn about that. And I figured, well, this is how I'm going to learn, by doing it. And I can only do this stuff alone right now. So I'm just going to do this. And it was a lot of fun, man. Like it was, it was a lot of fun to do.
I can't recommend it enough to anybody who's listening. If you wanted to give it a try, the best thing to do is to just start, and it took me, I did some work, as an audio engineer before, shadowing Andy Clark. I did some producing stuff at like Retro City Studios and some other place. And, the thing it took me forever to learn is that the best part of the recording and the most important part of the recording is the actual source. So, I mean, clearly you're very good. Mm-hmm. Singer, very good guitar player.
Right.
It's a very good. You're working with some good shit, is what I'm saying. But if you want to get into it, I can't recommend anybody do it enough. And there's so many cool free resources on YouTube, even though for some reason they're all either German or Australian and like somewhat unsettling a little bit. But there's some real good ones on there. There's also a website called Coursera, which partners with other universities to create certificate programs and do courses, and they have some really, really easy, cool audio engineering ones that you can spend 5 hours a week, a couple weeks in a row, and you'll be, kind of proficient at the end. So I just wanted to throw that out there for anybody listening.
But nice one.
Yeah, dude, it's so cool. I'll put it in the show notes or whatever. Hopefully, I wanted to pivot real quick or change course for a second and say that I think that you guys are the band that we have toured with more than any other band of like one single band. And also, you guys have always been really similar to us. We're very close to the same age, and we've also have known each other within our band interpersonally for forever. You guys met when you were in kindergarten. You and Scott met, I believe, right?
Scott and I met the first day of kindergarten.
That's incredible. I wanted to ask, what kind of tools you guys have used to be able to stay such close friends and musicians together for so long. I mean, you've been doing this as long as me to see how many bands come and go and how their personalities either mesh or don't, or some of them are centered around one person. It's kind of like, all that kind of shit. But you guys have been able to take a friendship and a common background and rolled it into what, 18 years of the same art project. It's fucking badass.
Thanks, man. Yeah. It's, man. I mean, every year that passes and we reach like an anniversary of the band's first show and stuff like that, like it always has meant a lot, and it always, it always makes me really reflect on like what we've done all together and all this stuff. But the closer we get to being a 20-year band, which is soon, it's crazy to think how everything kind of added up. But honestly, there's no real rhyme or reason to it. It's just I think we just get along, and the reason we get along is because now we have this band, and it's like this shared interest that, takes up our whole lives and most of our hearts and stuff like that. And I don't know, man, it's, I think there's a little magic in it somewhere, like Scott and I met.
It's gotta be.
Scott and I met the first day of kindergarten. John and I were in the same grade 2 class, and we were like going around the class and like telling our classmates what street we lived on. And we both said the same street name. It's like, oh, we live on the same street. That's cool. So then John and I would walk to school together every day for the rest of our time at school, until I moved away. which was sad. And then Scott and I would go to this music camp as kids, and we met Paul there because Paul grew up in a different town. So we met Paul when we were 12. And yeah, just, damn. I don't know. There over the years, there's so much time spent together that there's been some amazing times and there's been some horrible times. Sure. That's just how people are.
Of course. Yeah,
It's nothing that would ever get in the way of what we do together as a band. It's never threatened anything we do as a band. I just mean, you know what I mean? And you're on tour all the time. You're just in close quarters. You're going to know each other so well that you know exactly what buttons to push.
And touring also, is really fun, but it's also, you know, you take any amount of people and put them in that small and that stressful of a situation. Dogs barking at each other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't want to paint the picture of it being like a strenuous thing. Like, it's really the opposite. Like, I think maybe that's in part why we take our time with what we do. Just as far as like putting music out is because we love that process of like being in the room together and working on it. And like, I think all of us are pretty classic overthinkers. I mean, probably all fucking musicians in general, but I know for a fact that the group of, four individuals that make up the Flatliners, we overthink everything. But I can't say it hasn't worked to our advantage. I mean, I don't know, man. It's a beautiful thing. I love these guys so much, and we know everything about each other, and it still feels like there's more to discover together. And the closer we get to that 20-year mark, man, it just makes all of us smile so much more, and it's incredible. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, we've been lucky enough that we've had our world as a band together shaped by people like you and the Menzingers and these musicians that we've met over the years. I mean, we've been super lucky. I mean, I think a lot of bands try to come in maybe a little too hot and they expect a lot off the bat. I can't think of a single example to back up what I just said, but you got it.
I have an archetype, right?
Nor would I like want to call people out.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like there's people like that in every fucking industry, whatever.
True.
But I feel like somehow in the people we've come across, we haven't really experienced many like that, Yeah. So it's been cool to just kind of let it all happen. And then now all of a sudden look back like, damn, 18 years deep. All right. It's just kind of,
what a feat, man. That's so fantastic. Two decades.
Well, you guys aren't too far behind us, are you?
No, we started jamming the summer of the end. I think it was the fall of 2005. We had some practices. And then the next year we kind of got into it. And then when we moved to Philly in 2008, we really started to go at it. We all moved into the same house with some other people. And it was the housing crisis, all that shit. All that whole story.
True. That's great. Because what's the deal? You guys are all from Scranton, except Greg's from like the mountains somewhere. Is that right?
Yeah. So Greg's from a place called Lake Ariel, which is, it's probably about 20 miles outside of Scranton, would be my guess.
Okay.
Eric grew up in North Scranton. I grew up in West Scranton. And Joe grew up in South Scranton. And
damn.
Joe and I's family actually knew each other. So his great aunt was my grandmother's best friend. They grew up on the same street in West
Scranton. No way. Each other.
Yeah. So I met him at like family events here and there. Growing up, and then as we got older, we were like, hey, that guy's in a band too, and I went to go see his band, and then kind of just worked that way. But yeah, we were in a similar situation. We knew each other then. We have been able to make the band last this long, having the same, similar to you guys. I think everybody's just on the same page and kind of puts the band in above ourselves each and above like the group of us. It became something. It was our ticket, man. It was our ticket to get out of Scranton. It was our ticket to see the world, not that living in Scranton is a bad thing. I go back there and I see my friends and I realize all the shit that I talk and I'm like, this is a wonderful situation you've got going on here. It can't be, side note, got too tangential, but it was our ticket to get out of there.
I can totally back what you're saying. Yeah. I feel the same way when I go back to my hometown. I'm like, what was I so upset about? This place is great.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, well, a lot of all the people that overdosed and died and all ran into that shit, you kind of forget about, but
Those are not good things. That's
those
right.
are not good yeah. things. Yeah, those are you see, things. Even like when you're saying some bands that come in super hot or some people that come in just like so hot on stuff. I'm glad that we weren't able to do that. I'm glad that we didn't become super popular or have any money really fast, because I think that we would have burnt right the fuck out.
Oh yeah, it changes people for sure. It definitely changes people. Yeah, 100%, 100%. I mean, yeah, I it's so funny you say that about your hometown. Like, you go back now, we're similar age, right? I feel like it's
yeah, I'm 34.
Okay, yeah, I'm a year behind you, and I just at some point in recent memory, went back to. I mean, I grew up 20 fucking kilometers north of Toronto. Like, I'm a Toronto suburb kid.
So you grew up in
kid.
Toronto.
Yeah. Like,
I
well,
take it there's
people,
probably a train
people
that
grew up
we
in
could
the
go.
City would have. You know, would have your head for saying that.
Yeah, oh, sure, of course. They're always gatekeepers everywhere. Yeah,
that's right. Man, we gotta look out for them. but yeah, we you know, we like went back one night and just like kind of kicked it. I think around the holidays, something like that, to like this bar we used to like just, you know, drink too much at and like puke in the corner. Like, just like, stupid 19-year-old shit when you're allowed to drink it first in Ontario. And we went back, and I was like, this fucking rules. Like, I felt like I was in a movie a little bit, which was, there was a nice feeling of like, everyone's here. It's the holidays. Let's, you know, let's hang out. We're back. Yeah. Like, we're back from the city. Let's fucking light it up. All this dumb shit. But, you know, then we spent a little time just spending time like in our hometown thinking like, this is great. I don't need, I think maybe at some point the touring so much and you're in a different city every day, whether it's a big city or a small town, whatever. You have so much like bustling around you at all times that you come home. Like, I come home to one of the biggest cities in North America, and it's great, but it's also kind of exhausting sometimes, right? So I think it was like that kind of cocktail of like that was all happening in my brain, and then I went back to my you know, kind of sleepy suburb, and I was like, "Ooh, this is good. I like this. Yeah, this is what I need. Now I understand."
This you just even like the smell, like subconsciously just being there. You know, you're like safe. Or not, who knows?
Oh, yeah.
For me, going to Scranton, it's cheaper. All the food is what I remember growing up eating. You know, it's just kind of like just being in a – Scranton's in a valley. You guys have been there. You guys are the last band that was ever allowed to stay at my parents' house.
I'm sorry about that.
So we were living – I was living in Philly at the time. I came home for – I believe it was on Parade Day in Scranton, which anybody who's from Scranton knows what that is. That's when Scranton's population doubles. It was canceled this year due to as we say in Scranton, to COVID. I heard that people say that like 50 times this last weekend.
He got to COVID.
Yeah, he got to COVID. Oh, before to COVID, it was like this. Love it. But yeah, I was up there visiting my brother and Bobby Barnett and our friend Pat Flynn this last weekend. But yeah, so it was Parade Day, which is a day that's just debaucherous drinking, celebrating your, you know, whether you are Irish heritage or not. Scranton was, you know, built that way. So everybody just kind of gets wasted all day. And then you guys played in Wilkes-Barre with Anti-Flag.
That's right.
That's what it was. Yeah, yep. And I went down to somehow got the down there. I don't have no idea how I got down there. And then I was like, I asked my parents if you guys could stay. I'm like, yeah, you could stay. And then you guys came and stayed, and we just like got even more drunk. And like, I think I left a pipe out maybe.
Yeah, something I was going to say, there was something with weed that happened.
Yeah,
but I don't think we met your parents, though.
You may not have.
I don't think we did.
Interesting. Maybe only one of them was there.
Like, I feel like they were like gone the next morning by the time we woke up or something.
Yeah, I think maybe only one of them was there, and then they left like real early the next morning, but my mom was like, no more.
No more. Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I was like, okay, sorry. I'm like 25.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But so yeah, you guys closed out that era, because when we were in high school, or like right towards the end of high school, a lot of bands would come and stay over and stuff. But
hell yeah,
yeah.
Well, I wanted to say earlier when we were talking about like the band dynamics and stuff, I know you and I have spoken about this before. It blows my mind in such a beautiful way when I see like the Menzingers come home from a 6-week tour, and then like on Instagram, one of you guys posts something 2 days later. You're like, I'm just having lunch with Joe. Like, I love these guys. I love these guys and how much they love each other. It's really incredible. I'm like I know I'm lucky to have this magical thing with my guys, but when we come home from a 6-week tour, like I'm taking a break from hanging out with anyone I've just spent 6 weeks with for at least a week, you know?
Oh yeah.
But you guys are different. And I love that about you guys. It's so pure. It's so beautiful. It really
is. We're buds, man. We get home and you get bored really fast. It is like you're saying, it's nice to be, I don't want to be near anybody for maybe 24 hours.
I just need a break.
Need a break. But then, I don't know, you got to do something. Maybe Joe wants to go to the gym with me. I don't know. See, stop by at Greg's and pick something up. Yeah.
I mean, you're on the same schedule. You know,
we live in the same neighborhood. We could all walk to each other's houses, and we don't really anymore. Actually, just dropped off some pickles at Joe's house like 2 days ago.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we've gotten into the home culinary, the millennial home culinary stuck from COVID situation of making pickles and bread.
Oh, hell yeah. I never did the bread thing. My mom gave me like a starter for sourdough, I think, and then I found a pretty efficient way to ruin it. I was proud of that. I mean, everyone's proud of the bread they made. I'm proud of how quickly I destroyed the starter that I was gifted from my mom.
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure can just live in the fridge.
Yeah, I killed it. So
I think you just need
like
to feed it or whatever. Yeah, we made the bread a couple times when it was really in full swing, and then.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Good. It's too sticky.
It's a little too sticky.
But yeah,
are you growing mushrooms at home yet, or what are you doing?
Yeah, oh yeah, I've been growing mushrooms for many years. I actually just this morning signed up for a food foraging certification program through a company in South Carolina. So you'd normally have to be there to take the weekend course or whatever. But now it's on Zoom this year, so I can actually go. And then I'll get a certificate to be able to forage mushrooms in Pennsylvania, Oregon, a couple other, New York. It's like good for all that shit. And I could like sell them to restaurants and stuff. I'm not going to do that. I don't picture myself getting that COVID yet. Like,
right.
Everybody's rumors like, what happened to him? Oh, he let his bald hair grow like a foot, and he just looks for toadstools in the woods all day to sell to the restaurants.
He stopped wearing shoes. He just said he didn't need them anymore. Shoes. He said he never needed them in the first place.
Exactly. He said we've been trained by the elites to walk improperly to oppress us.
Exactly.
Yeah. But no, I'm loving
good
that.
Good for you, though. That's exciting.
It's a lot of fun for me. I really like mushrooms. It's super cool. Have you guys? So what do you guys – how is the band active right now? Are you guys able to practice? Is everybody like doing any type of are you guys all taking the time, like you were saying, similarly to kind of recollect, reconvene, write and stuff? Or is it like everybody rolling through?
It's tricky because so Scott and I are the only ones that are still currently in the city.
Okay.
Paul's not far away, but he's with some family on a farm, which is awesome. So
I've seen him post a couple of videos of him playing drums outside, and it looks really cool.
Yeah, we've been able – it's not too far outside of the city, so we've been able to get up there and visit a few times, and it's beautiful up there. And his family's always had our band's back in a big way. Like way back, we jammed at his mom and late stepdad's produce warehouse. Like
they have this produce company
that they had these offices like in the back of the warehouse back in the day that weren't really conducive to how they do business. Like, so they weren't going to use these offices like way out of the way. So they outfitted them with like carpet and a vent because they knew we'd be like smoking in there and stuff. Like tucked us away in the corner, and like as long as we showed up after 4 p.m. we could jam as late as we wanted. Like incredible hookup. They've always been great to us. So he's there with his mom, and like they've got like family and kind of, you know, like a whole kind of scene up there, and so that's been good for him. John lives like 3 hours away. Yeah, he lives 3 hours east of Toronto, so that's been difficult. We have not jammed since lockdown had began, and then now it's been kind of semi-lifted or whatever. So
cool.
That's tough. But I mean, you know, it could be worse. Like at the very least, like we can all like share ideas, and we're chatting all the time and like trying to come up with maybe a timeline when we can get in the room. It's just difficult with that kind of, at this point, with the cross-pollination of, you know, you live in that city and we live in this city, and like this city's got its problems and that city's got its cases, and then what happens when we get together? And
yeah,
we're still being pretty
trying
to be pretty careful about that kind of stuff, right? So we haven't, there's no real jams to speak of yet, which is too bad, because man, like we haven't had this much downtime. I was thinking about the other day, we haven't had this much downtime since we were writing The Great Awake, which would have been during 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all I want is to get in a room with those three guys and not accomplish anything. I want to get
play
in the
room. Same four chords in the same way for an hour, and it becomes like a group meditation. That's my favorite fucking thing in the world.
Yeah, I want to bring it back to like when we jammed in my parents' basement and there was no door on the basement, So they were like listening to us learn how to play our instruments and write. So they would just literally be listening to what you said, like they like the same bar of music for 4 hours.
Oh
every
God,
Sunday.
I love it. I don't know how anybody who was around us while we were practicing ever dealt with it. we actually also have not jammed yet. So we did that whole we recorded a record remotely.
We
did it all separate in our houses.
Wow.
So we had to do, I think Joe did a bunch of it on GarageBand. Or he did it on Logic. They were doing like a free trial kind of thing going on for a minute there. But yeah, we did also had to kind of like throw, some of us had to jump into the deep end of home recording. And it was, you know, it was really interesting to work it out that way. But yeah, we haven't jammed and we've been trying to navigate how we're going to do that. We did move into a new space, so we have met up. We had to clear out our old space, which is like a whole wild ass story that you know,
wait, was that
sometime.
The place you were sharing with a bunch of bands?
Kind
like the warehouse
thing? That was an old, so we used to have an old taxi dispatch office above a warehouse on in between Second and Moy Mensing on Tasker. And so if you walk by there now, it's actually like a row home mansion. We call it Cheesesteak Mansion because it's, I think it's the people who own Pat's. Out the space of the warehouse, and they built like a familial complex inside of where row homes would be. It's super weird, but we had that space that you're talking about forever. It was an old, super really cool place. But then
was that the place that like Sheer Mag was jamming and all those bands?
No, that's the next place that we got. So that was over on Gray's, across from Bartram's Garden near Gray's Ferry, and that was like a weird, wild scene. That was like got shut down by L&I while we were on tour. They had by the end when we were leaving, I couldn't get in touch with the landlord. There was a fire that would start if you used one of the light switches, so we had to turn the breaker off. We were paying like out of the ass for this place. It was in an old appliance storefront was what it was, but the whole building is an old paint building. But there's like they were having like DSA meetings there, and they were having illegal shows, and it kept getting shut down. It was just it was a fucking mess, and they didn't take care of the building. But now we got another place. So we all had to move in there, and that was cool to see each other for the first time while we're doing that.
How long had you not seen each other for at that point?
The longest we went without seeing each other was honestly probably like 3 or 4 weeks. Definitely walked down, like rang the doorbell, shared food when everybody was just trying to figure out what to do with their hands while no one knew what to work, you know? Their own little projects. But we're trying to right now. Actually, looking at my phone, I think there's 16 messages of the guys. We're trying to figure out what would be safe to figure out for practicing and that kind of shit. So it's tough in the States. We don't have there hasn't been a central narrative. So a lot of the facts of things, and I'm sure you know, we consume the same media and shit. A lot of things have become politicized. It's very bizarre to kind of like some people move into these camps where they go balls to the wall in every direction. People think that the virus isn't real. People think that people leaving their house is like some kind of crime. Like it's really fucking weird, and it's been really, really difficult to parse through what actual information we need because it's coming from fucking the Philadelphia government, the Pennsylvania government, the federal government. Yep. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, I feel.
God damn it!
Motherfucking god damn it! I can relate in the sense of it's been handled differently, I think, up here, but also it's been a little mismanaged. I mean, how could it not be? I think these fucking people are making it up as they go along. I mean, there's obviously governments have to have some kind of plan in place, but I don't trust it. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I don't trust the government, okay? I never told that to anyone except my wife either.
Yeah, a little afraid saying it.
But it's been so confusing, and in a time where everyone has – I mean, there's still people that have been working this whole time, have kids and families. And there's like even you know, guys like you and I have had little or no downtime. But everyone does have a little more time or a lot more time to varying degrees of being able to take in this information and to really see how it makes you feel and to really think about it and to see how you can apply it to your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And it's confusing. It's so confusing. And that's there was all these communities around Toronto that were moving into different stages, but Toronto wasn't yet. Me living in the city, if I wanted to be a dick about it, I could have driven an hour outside of Toronto and gone and sat on a patio at a restaurant, no mask, and just hung out and then come home to the city. And I could have done that. So like
and
that,
we're relying on you to not do that, but you could have done that. Yeah.
That's just one example of how, you know, you can so easily get around these, these kind of suggestions, these recommendations, these you know, like public health guidelines that are being put out there. So like, it is important to listen to them. And I want to say that I wasn't doing those things. Okay. I was not doing those things, but there are people that were and still are. And, I don't understand the arrogance of people out there saying, I don't need to wear a mask. You know, like I'm only worrying about myself, or the audacity of people thinking that's fake. I mean, what the fuck are these people thinking? I know it's no new hot take. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. It's so arrogant. It's so ugly. It's disgusting. And I just, the more we just do our thing and play it safe, the shorter this will be. Because everyone at first, whether we're talking about canceling tours and rebooking them for the summer or the fall, or just people in general talking about how like, oh, guess my birthday in May might be a little bit of a lockdown birthday, but you know, your birthday in November will be good. Like, no, like this could last way longer than we think. The arrogance of the human race, the arrogance of the human race is just showing all its cards. And it's really disheartening, man. And I mean, I've been so conflicted, probably more conflicted than I ever been, between being like so inspired and also just so misanthropic and disappointed, you know. And everyone's a person and everyone's flawed and everyone's got their problems, and no one's perfect. I understand that, but let's try. We got to try a little harder, totally. I think, everybody. You
I
know?
Think I do. Some people, I understand why they feel some of those ways. Not necessarily the – so I think there's a couple parts to it. One, in a place like, you know, Canada or anywhere, in here in Pennsylvania, you have counties that – are wildly rural, you know, where only a couple thousand people live in a place that's the square footage area of like Rhode Island. And then places like Philadelphia, which is, you know, there's 2 million people here slammed on top of each other. The rules aren't going to apply the same to each of them. So you have people who might be in a county where no one has gotten sick at all, or they haven't had an active case of it for, you know, I don't know, fucking 2 months. And then you can't go to your dad's funeral, but you can watch everybody going to these other funerals on TV, or you can't go to church, but you can go to Walmart. So I can understand why someone would get upset about that or confused. But the selfish nature of people who refuse to wear masks and say it's because it's uncomfortable or because of whatever, it's that science is there. You know, they at least know it's better than not wearing a mask. So I hope that kind of that selfish inclination that we have in this point, at this point in Western civilization here, goes away. I mean, we're missing a lot of the institutions and things that people used to be a part of. There's no fucking bowling teams anymore. There's no, you know, people.
Buffets are out.
Buffets are out.
No more buffets.
Lot of the civic associations that people used to be involved with decades ago aren't there. And I think a lot of people are by themselves now, and they don't feel like they're part of a community, and they're kind of like being really insane and lashing out and consuming information that's just wrong and fucked up, and I really hope that goes away. Did you play Japan?
Yeah,
I remember you guys were there before us. I remember asking you about the different aspects. I remember seeing how many people wore masks all the time there. I remember asking Mizuki, who had us over there, was like, hey man, why are these people wearing masks? They're afraid they're gonna get sick. And he's like, no, you wear a mask when you're sick. Because of the collectivist nature of the culture, you just like, you would do that. And I hope that is one of the byproducts of this in the future, is that people don't go to where that whole like go get 'em hustler attitude is great, and I think a lot of cool things come from it. But I don't think people are going to go to work anymore when they're sick with the regular cold. And I hope that I see people wearing masks, you know, for the rest of the time here as whenever they're sick. Like, I hope that is something good that we borrow from it.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree. It could be, and if that's true, it could be the beginning of something really good. Because another thing with going to Japan, I noticed the first time, was that in addition to the mask thing, which I thought was so it's just like really considerate thing to do. So, you know, that's great. That's a great thing. That's a great launching point. And then I would look around and there was no garbage anywhere. Garbage cans anywhere either. So I'm thinking like, these people figured it out. Like, this is amazing. I love it. Like, I mean, so much of Japanese culture, I think, is based on respect, and it's a mutual respect. It's respect for each other, and I think that hopefully if people in Western culture can lock down the mask thing and like just really wrap their heads around it, or it around their head, I should say, I guess, and you know, and get to a point where we're borrowing more and more from where we learned that little mask trick from, Imagine you could walk around Philly and not see any garbage or garbage cans.
Oh my God,
can
you imagine?
You have garbage, you just
Jesus
put it in your pocket.
Christ.
You just put it in your pocket and you hold on to it until you get home or you see a garbage can and then boom, that's it. There's also no cigarette butts anywhere.
Yeah.
And there's like designated smoking sections. I don't know, all this stuff. That was one of the first places we went where it really felt like we were a world away.
Exactly.
You know, you go to Europe and it's an incredible experience the first time. And for me, it continues to be. I love going traveling in Europe and stuff, playing shows, this and that, being in those places. You know, you're seeing a different language on a street sign, for instance, but it's in the same alphabet, right?
Yeah, so, it's the Phoenician alphabet. Even the way nonverbal communication is very similar. Like you can go to Italy or even Brazil or Mexico and or Toronto. you go and you can kind of like get by. All the behavior kind of makes sense. You can read people easily. Mm-hmm. Everything looks similar. I mean, half the shit is in English because it's like American English and Canadian companies that sell them the stuff. But going to Japan, I think you articulated it perfectly in saying that was the first time you feel worlds away. It was the first time that I saw humans that are me. I'm like this, a society and a civilization built by humans that have fundamentally different aspects to it or came from different values, and it was just so eye-opening and fascinating to take away those great things. And I could see that there'd be arguments against that kind of collectivism in certain regards or whatever, but those things were beautiful. Even unloading the van, you don't have to watch the van because they just don't have like that kind of petty crime. No one would walk up and steal a guitar out of the van. Like, it's interesting.
It was definitely a pretty impactful, like, first visit, you know. And but I really remember seeing someone with a mask on the first time, and this guy Daisuke that was showing us around. I had a super similar conversation with him. I was like, what's up with the masks? We were on the train, so I saw a couple people wearing masks.
Yeah.
And he was like, if you feel sick but not too sick to, like, you know, go to work, if like you're still gonna live your life but you have a little tickle in your throat, you just put a mask on your face. That's so sweet. Great. Yeah, let's do that. That's very nice. Yeah.
So funny.
And simple. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that's going to come out when we look at – I hope someone makes a documentary and – well, two. One, I hope somebody makes a documentary about the Flatliners for their 20th anniversary, because I would watch the fuck out of that and it would be amazing. Another one, I hope that somebody takes this premise and just turns it into a documentary that I can watch, something that requires no work on my part at all. Takes the effect that coronavirus had on a place like Japan and then on the United States, and then find the different data points and metrics and see why it was such a wildly different reaction, even though you know, Japan didn't have to fully lock down and didn't have to do the things that we tried to do in certain regards. I would love to see the, like, the fundamental differences as to why that happened, if they even can. I don't know. Every time my friend sends me like a study summary of something that they're learning about COVID, it just shows that no one fucking knows anything about this goddamn virus.
It's very confusing. Yeah. And I think that's maybe why it's going to last longer than we arrogantly want it to. You know what I mean? I don't know, man. I am trying to remain optimistic, though. I don't mean to paint that, like, just negative picture. I want to get out there and do what I do. I want everyone to be able to get out there and do what they do. But you know, if this year is a reset year and we're learning a lot of things about, like, the planet and us as people, and since a lot of them are bad things, we should probably take this time to address them and learn from them and, learn from our mistakes and correct our path here. Cause it's getting bad.
I would say that we're obligated.
I think you're right. We are obligated, and it's not too late. I just think that, early on this year, I had the thought, I was like, oh fuck, let's just, you know, fast forward through 2020 and whatever, let's get it over with. But now there's something kind of, well, I feel like it's like, it's important to sit in the discomfort of it all, you know, and to really think about it and try to come out of this year stronger, even if you're talking about you as an individual or your family or your group of friends or just, you know, as people. I think there's a lot of shit being thrown at everyone this year, and we got to correct the path, man. And, you know,
it's a little bit Wizard of Oz-ish, you know, like they're kind of the distractions are gone. The curtains have been pulled back.
That's right.
It's kind of like you're this highway of life. We've got a fucking flat tire and we know we're not leaving for another 4 hours or whatever. So we just take the time to sit here and reprioritize, actually prioritize what you want to do, how you affect those around you, like how you can use your love and relationships to make their lives better, make yourself better.
That's right.
Like, I think we're obligated to do that, and everybody can do it in their own way. I think I get this, like, I don't want to call it cheesy, but keep saying this. There is, like, people with your type of personality, mine, kind of, you know, our bandmates, we are like, okay, I've got 6 months off. I'm going to get this, and this done. And if I don't, then it's a failure. I have to, like, go 100,000 miles an hour. If I'm stuck in my house, I better write 4 albums. Otherwise, I failed. But that's, that's not the case.
A lot of pressure.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally. And I think that people, you know, people can grow in their own way. But also, there is, like, a bit of an obligation or responsibility. I don't think you can just, you know, drink wine and eat sourdough bread the whole time and just come out the other side. And I know that 22-year-old me would find this unfathomable, but 34-year-old me is kind of like, all right, well, if there's a, you know, besides people who have been completely decimated and the economic destruction that is happening and is going to happen, this might be that weird year. It's like, okay, well, we had a weird year or a weird 2 years or wherever where college football didn't happen. And we didn't tour, but we had to figure out another way to make money, and we got these other jobs or whatever. And that's
We just spent our time figuring out who we are and smashing racism, and just tearing down the amount of money police make, and realizing that people die from a disease that's real.
Yeah,
from a virus that's real.
Broad systemic changes when they're possible.
Long ago, I bailed on my yearning for this year to be fast forward. I was like, you know what? Yeah. Like, this year is a little more than half over now, I guess. Like, let's just sit in this discomfort. Let's learn from it. Let's turn it around. And hopefully, this year being so bad that, this is the worst of it.
Yeah.
But we don't know that yet.
We don't know. Who knows what 2023 is going to be like? We might be wishing was 2020. But I wanted to ask you a few things before we kind of get wrapping up. Is John still doing Wing Chun?
Yeah.
All right. Hell yeah. So John, for those who don't know, sometimes talk about martial arts on the podcast. John does Wing Chun Kung Fu, and he's really fucking good at it. Have you ever seen it? It's like you practice on a dummy, and there's different modes and hand moves that you do. And last time I saw him do it was when we toured together in Europe. So he's got to be real fucking good at it now. That was like 3 years ago.
He's doing it a lot. I mean, he's got his wooden dummy at home.
Hell yeah.
But he's had a lot of time to practice. I remember when he was telling me and the guys that he was getting a dummy in the mail, we were like, what kind of dummy is he getting? We had no idea. Like, because he would share these parts of his life with us. But I mean, I didn't know you practice on a dummy. So it took me a little while to figure out what the hell he was talking about. But he loves it. It's good for a man. It centers him. I think everyone needs, like, everyone has their own thing.
Yeah.
And for him, it's that. And he so really sick. Loves it, man. It's really good for him.
Yeah, you should look up a YouTube video and watch it if you're listening. It's pretty fucking cool. And I also wanted to talk to you about the cooking series you guys are doing on Instagram.
Because it's
so fucking funny, and I love it so much. I really want to try the, I believe it was a pancake double cheeseburger that you made.
yeah, cheeseburger. It was like a cheeseburger Big Mac, pretty much, but with pancakes. Instead of a bun.
Yeah, I consider myself a pretty good cook. I've been cooking for you. I worked as a cook, a line cook, and shit like that. But I've never made pancakes before in my entire life.
Oh, it's so easy. Yeah.
You showed
me. So easy. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you like those videos. They've been a lot of fun. There's still more fun to come.
Yeah, you guys got to check them out. Yeah. They're so fucking funny and awesome. But I wanted to ask you to close out. I've been finding a lot of good things from people whose opinions and worldviews I agree with and trust, and whose, like, art is pretty cool. Have you been consuming anything good recently? You watching any good shows, reading any good books? Is there any music we should check out? How is that getting these recommendations?
Yeah, I'm a very slow reader, and I get distracted easily. And with the amount of time I typically spend on the road, in recent years I have not been reading as many books as I would want to.
Sure.
But in the last few months, like, I love, it's so cliche and so obvious, but I love, like, rock and roll bios and stuff.
Dude.
So I read.
I've always forget how fucking good they are until I read
They're
one.
They're great. They're great.
Right back into it.
I mean, you know, in a movie documentary sense, like, I could watch a rock doc about someone I know nothing about or couldn't give a shit about. Like I grew up like thinking the Eagles were fucking lame. And then I watched the 4-hour documentary a couple years. I was like, oh my God, these guys are amazing. I just fall for it every time. So yeah. I read the Jeff Tweedy book, Let's Go So We Can Get Back.
Cool.
So it's Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, big Wilco fan. I have Scott Brigham of the Flatliners to thank for that whole musical introduction. He's a huge, huge Wilco and Jeff Tweedy fan. So Nice. Yeah, that's a great book. He's got a great story. I just started reading the Robbie Robertson book, which is really cool because there's a lot. He grew up in Ontario. His mom is of Six Nations, so she was living on Six Nations for a while, and then she moved to Toronto at some point. This is in the 50s, early 50s, I believe. And then the area she lived in Toronto is like right like where I used to live. It's the annex. There's a Christie Pitts Park and everything, but it's along the subway line, the east-west subway line in Toronto. So that's Bloor Street and this neighborhood that like I'm very familiar with in the city. So that's really cool.
That's got to be awesome to be able to bring it all home and like see the businesses, street names, that kind of. That's fucking cool. Yeah.
And he's like he's telling these stories about him walking around those neighborhoods as a kid. Like this is before he plays with, you know, Ronnie Hawkins and Bob Dylan and is in the fucking band and you know like all this insane shit that he goes on to do. So it's really cool. I read a couple books that I wasn't like that thrilled on, so I won't even speak on them because I just feel like that's mean to be like, dude, that book sucks.
Somebody said something on a podcast, and I feel like this is the fifth time I've said somebody said, and I should credit them. Somebody said one time, they're like, yeah, I'll get a book sometimes and I'll read a couple chapters and I don't like it and I stop. And they just normalized that for me, and I didn't. I was for some reason was so ashamed of doing that for so many years because I was like, no, I bought this book or I got it from the library. I have to finish it, and then I realized so many times where I get like halfway through a book, I'm like, this, I'm done. I'm over it.
Yeah,
I'll read the summary on Wikipedia and call it a day.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that point yet where I'll bail on it, but yeah. I mean, yeah, I read a couple this summer. I was like, whatever. I mean, I'm just trying to get my brain going. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be the best book ever. Man, I think that I've been writing a lot this year, and I found that in recent years, when I'm writing a lot of music, I stop listening to other music.
Sure.
Not completely, but my listening of music really takes a dip. Now, lucky for me, and like you know, the year we're in, and all this stuff, like I can still be entertained. I can listen to podcasts and stuff. And I can get entertainment out of that, but then I can also like work on my music, and I don't know why it is. I have a theory that it's maybe I'm like worried I'm gonna like inadvertently steal something,
jack some melody,
and put it on a record, and then you know what I mean. So I think I'm kind of, it's my like defense mechanism. But I will say, I think like one of the best pieces of music I heard come out this year was put out by a band called Twin Peaks from Chicago, and ooh, I love that band so much. And they put out like an EP. It's a 4-track thing called Side A. So I'm assuming they're gonna maybe put out Side B at some point too. It's incredible, man. I want to say these guys are younger than you and I, and it sounds like some shit like that. I don't know, dude. This is like some high praise, but I really stand behind it. Like you can tell these dudes love like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And now I know. Wow. People listening at home will be like, okay, well, those are the two biggest bands ever. So sure. But there's something, it's more than just them being fans. Like some of this shit sounds like it could have come from that era. Like specifically on this EP called Side A, some of this sounds like, I remember the first time I heard Tame Impala, I was like, that's if John Lennon was here today, you know, very similar kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
I just like his voice and like just the way the music goes. I don't know. I fell so in love with it. And same thing with Twin Peaks, man. They're amazing. They just have really like,
damn,
blown my mind.
I don't
mind
think
with
you could have given a higher a recommendation or like a more loaded praise for something. I have to check this out now.
I bet some people are going to listen to this and put it on there and be like, this sucks. I don't know. But no, it was just something about that hit me. I was like, damn, like this is like, it's really just good. Like a certain era of rock and roll, like they're worshiping, I think, and they do it well, man. I'm just, maybe I should have said it that way instead.
Yeah, damn, I'm stoked to check
them amazing.
Out. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really great.
Well, a huge thank you so much for coming on, and thanks so much for those recommendations. I'm gonna throw them in the show notes at the end. But dude, thank you so much. I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah,
I can't
buddy.
Wait to see you in person again.
I know we've been pretty lucky the last few years, like you know, running into each other on the road a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll continue, but yeah, buddy, I know I miss you, and I'm glad everyone in your life is doing all right. And I don't know, man, until we meet again, dude.
Yeah,
hopefully,
dude.
It's in person.
Ditto. Please send my love to the rest of the boys.
I will, man. Likewise.
So long.
Huge thanks to Chris again. The links to the books and music he mentioned are in the show notes, but just in case you missed it, they were Let's Go, So We Can Get Back by Jeff Tweedy and Wilco, Testimony by Robbie Robertson, And the record was Side A by Twin Peaks, which I have since listened to before recording this outro, and it's fucking awesome. I recommend it a whole mess as well. If you want to listen to Chris's music, look up the Flatliners, for God's sakes. His solo music is available at chriscresswell.bandcamp.com. And until next week, we'll see you later.